And welcome into More Outdoors. And thank you to our listeners who are kind of helping us get through this, Sheree. So anyway, we got a great program lined up for you. We're going to try to get a hold of some duck callers out there in the marsh on this second to last day of the opening split of Louisiana duck season for at least the east and the coastal. I'm sorry, the west and the coastal zone. Second split will be coming up a little bit later on. It's been mixed reviews on the east side. Ryan Lambert said this is one of the worst. I heard from a lot of people hunting the Carnarvon, Delacroix area. It's been very difficult, tough over there. Even in the some of the other areas that are usually prime areas just have not been getting the birds. And it could be due to that high Mississippi River scattering the birds. But over in the southwestern part of the state where Captain Kirk is operating over there, Kirk Stansel and Hackberry, they are enjoying a very good first split season. And we're certainly glad to hear from them. I think we have Blake Swallow up in Catahoula with us, Sheree. Let's see if we got Blake with us. Blake, are you there? Let's see if we can get Blake on. Blake, you there?
Good morning. Yep.
Hey, Blake, how you doing this morning?
Doing good, Don. How are you?
Oh, good. We're kind of getting a recap on how this first split has been for all the different areas. And I know y'all had a really high water problem up there during the opening week. Has that changed, and has the hunting changed up there?
No, the water's been high, but we have probably had our best season in the last five as far as numbers for the first split. And it's very, very odd because, it's just been very good. We've shot a lot of teal and gray ducks, a few mallards and pintail, and, of course, we shoot a lot of divers up on the lake. But we have had an excellent first split, even better than last year.
And what do you attribute that to?
All I can think, Don, is there's a lot of birds in the fields close by. Hold on just a second. There's a lot of birds in the fields close by, and then they're hanging out on the lake. And that's all I can figure. But we have a lot of agricultural land that didn't get harvested this year, with a lot of beans and different things. And what's happened is those birds are hanging out on the lake during the day, loafing. And the mallards, there's not a whole lot of mallards anymore. We had a few the first few days, but we have quite a few grays, spoonbills, and teal. And of course, we have a lot of divers, canvasback, sculpin, and ringneck. So it's worked out pretty well. We haven't killed them all early in the morning. Some days we've had to stay till 12 or 1 o'clock. But if we can get the clients to hang with us, they're all having a really good hunt.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Blake Swallow of Full Strap and Stringers. They're hunting up in the Catahoula area, up in north, not so much north, but central Louisiana, and enjoying a very good season. Did you notice that when we had those frontal systems that you had a shot in the arm, more birds came in with those front systems?
We did. We did find that. But our early migrators always come to us on the full moon in October. So our grays and spoonbill and teal were going to be here anyway. But the cool weather made it very nice. And on those days, we did get a little push. But the last 2 days, of course, we've had some really balmy weather and no wind. And so it's been a little tougher. We've had to hunt later on into the day. But the birds are still here. A lot of old birds have kind of seen the show and getting in big rafts. So you just got to kind of wait for it to break up later in the day. But the cold fronts did help earlier in the season.
Like, what about geese? I had got a video someone sent my editor, Chris LeCocq, yesterday from Gaydon. They were fortunate enough when it happened, but it was obvious that we had tremendous numbers of snow geese moving in, and they have not been there as of yet. Are you seeing an increase in the number of geese?
In the last 4 days, no. And 3 or 4 days before that, we did get quite a few birds. But when this warm front got to us, it kind of bumped them off. Typically, we kill quite a few specks this time of year, but that's not happening right now. We're killing a few snows. We got some pretty good rag spread set out. Some of our clients want to shoot that in the afternoons, and so we go and do that. We kill a handful, but we haven't had an average speckle belly season so far.
Yeah, well, hopefully that will change during that second split. Blake, if you got any openings, can people get gift certificates and give those for Christmas for hunting either this season, or maybe they might even want to book in advance for next season?
Yes, absolutely. They can get in touch with us at fullstrapandstringer.com on our internet, or they can call me directly at 318-730-8809, and they can check us out on Facebook. We post there every day from the day previous, so they can kind of see what kind of species of birds we're doing. We We shot a show with Drake's Migration on Monday, and we actually harvested 8 different species of birds in one hunt. There's not a whole lot of places you can do that.
No, we actually duplicated that over in southwest Louisiana, and, boy, it's great when you can get them like that. Drake Nation, great show. Do you have any idea when it's going to air?
They usually air in the spring or early summer. Typically, it's our third time we've shot with them, and typically it's like April, May, June, something like that, to kind of, you know, everybody's fishing and to kind of get everybody thinking about duck hunting again. But we do have some openings yeah. still available the last 2 weeks of our season, which is the last 2 weeks of January. So if anybody's interested in that, just try to pick out a day that's good for you and give us a call, and we'll do our best to set you up.
And if they were driving and didn't have an opportunity to catch your website or your phone number, they're certainly welcome to contact me, and I'll put them in touch with you, Blake. And tip me off when that show is getting ready to air a week or so in advance, and we'll put that out so people can watch it.
I appreciate you very much, Don.
All right, we'll be talking to you in the second split. Maybe we might even get to make a trip up there. We'll try to see if we can work on that.
Love to have y'all up here. It's always a joy to have y'all hunt with us. So you have a great beginning of December, and hope everybody has a wonderful Christmas.
Thank you, Blake. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, and from the area where Blake hunts in Catahoula, let's jump over to Delacroix area. We got Captain Chris Pike standing by. And, Chris, you've been enjoying what I see on Facebook, a pretty good season. But, boy, I tell you, people all around you are crying. They're not, just not doing it. What's the difference?
I'm not saying it's good now. don't
well, maybe not today.
It's definitely day to day, man. It's been a tough season. We got a few concentrations of birds and you know some areas, but it's been very, very tough overall. We're scouting, you know, every day and trying to stay on a little concentration of them. But yeah, we definitely don't have the numbers we should.
Chris, you've been hunting professionally for several years, and before that, as a young man, you've been hunting a long time. Where would you rate this first split among the seasons as it goes? Would it be average, above average, below average? Where would you rank it?
Well, I'd definitely say below average. I've been guiding 14 or 15 years for the duck hunt, and this has definitely been the toughest first split I've ever had. You know, the numbers are just not there, man. We don't even have the teal that we should. Like I said, we had some good hunts and all, but nothing, mm-hmm. nothing like it should be. I don't understand it. It's not, they don't seem to be, you know, further south or further east or west in any numbers. I don't think it's anything to do with our marsh at all, but I'm sure they'll be here for the second split.
Well, hopefully they will. And, you know, the good thing that you've got to fall back on is the fishing, the casting part of it. If the blast is so-so, you can usually catch some fish. How's the fishing been down there?
The red fishing's been phenomenal. It's kind of like our wintertime bite is in full swing, and it's not even really winter weather for us. So they've gotten in huge concentrations. Most of the fish are pretty close to the dock. Places like Grand Lake and Little Lake, just kind of your typical wintertime areas where they get close to the deeper water up on some grass flats and anything that's got some shell bottom, they're getting on those shells for the warmer water. Probably since duck season opened, man, we've been having days where we're catching, you know, 50, 100, obviously keeping our limit and then throwing the rest back, but just totally unbelievable red fishing for us.
Chris, there's a lot of ways to fish redfish, everything from live bait to dead shrimp, under a cork, on the bottom, spinner baits, top water. What would you say is the favorite way for your customers to fish for reds?
By far, popping corks with shrimp, you know, on a jig head. What that seems to do for us is it'll keep those fish in the area that we're throwing in. Most of these spots, we're pulling up, anchoring down, and it might take 10 minutes, but once you get them going, they're gonna stay in the area for you for a while. The last few days, I've had some guys that wanted to throw some spinner baits. We literally, after we caught about 50 on popping corks, I picked up the anchor, and we trolled up and down the bank along the grass line where we were anchored, and you can't get a bite on the spinner bait. So the dead shrimp's definitely the ticket, man. It you know, it'll keep them in the area, and they're feeding off that smell. And it's a lot easier for my clients as well. You know, it's a more of a sight thing than a feel thing, so they can watch that cork, and it's pretty exciting watching that cork go sideways or go underwater. And I got a lot of out of town customers this week that bass fish, and they just can't believe the strength of these redfish. So it's fun.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, we're going to let you go, Chris, and hopefully the second split will be better for you, and we'll be in touch with you throughout the second split and keep us up to date. You're our eyes and ears for the Delacro Marsh when it comes to duck hunting.
Yes, sir, man. They'll be here. We actually got a good push Thursday of some gray ducks, but they're all out in open water. So we're going to wait for the second split, and we'll get on them. And if anybody like a gift certificate for Christmas, I got plenty. I can either email them to you or mail them to you. Best way is check out my website, lasaltwaterfishing.com, or my phone number is 504-427-4973.
Very good, Chris. Enjoy the day, and we'll catch up with you next time, buddy. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. I think that's the first time, Cherie, this season that while we had Chris on the air, he didn't have some activity where we heard the guns going off and the dogs hitting the water. So it's a little slow over there. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. Darren Digby's going to join us. Captain Darren Digby, by the way, one of the newer charter captains licensed in the state of Louisiana. Find out where he's hunting and how he's doing. How are you doing? How has your duck season been? We'd love to hear from you. Text us at 870-870. Our guest co-host today is Cherie Dubuque, my eldest daughter, and you'll listen to More Outdoors on WWL 105.3 FM HD2. Let's see if we can get a hold of Darren Digby here. Let's bring him up and see if we can get a duck report. Darren, you with us?
Yeah, Don, I'm here.
Hey, Darren, where are you hunting this morning?
I'm in Delacro, kind of outer Delacro, and I'm a little out of breath. I'm working the dog on a cripple.
What are you doing about foot?
Well, kind of brought him to the area, and because the bird went down kind of alive with a model duck. And I'm letting him hunt it up.
Well, Darren, I got to tell you, everybody except over in the extreme southwest part of the state is crying about the ducks, man. Just really kind of gone south, I guess, literally, on this opening for split that we've had here. How would you recap the whole split?
Yeah, it's definitely been tough across the board. You know, a few hunts here and there were good. But other than that, it's been grinding and scraping for – you know, 4 to 6 birds here and there. But when everybody else is doing about the same, you feel like you're doing okay.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that people need to realize is it's too early to give up. You know, duck hunting can change overnight, literally.
Good boy. Good boy. All right, we got that bird in hand. you know, you keep waiting for it to change overnight, Don, like you'd expect. Oh, good weather tomorrow. It'll shake it up. And it just, you show up with good conditions, and then just no birds. It's just pretty, you know, disheartening.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the model duck. You know, that's a bird that is a non-migratory species here in Louisiana. And I don't know, there's mixed reports on what the inventory actually is. And, you know, they keep kind of playing with the limits and keeping it down. And, well, I tell you what, that to me is, I think, the toughest bird to hunt in Louisiana is a model duck, because they're born, raised here, live here, and they kind of know their neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, yesterday, for example, I killed my first one of the season, and I had to walk through a pothole to jump shoot to do it. But just now, a pair kind of swung wide of the pond, and one of the pair gave us a chance. We knocked it down, and then the second one came back, and we got it as well. So kind of a rare chance there, but that's not too uncommon to happen that way.
Yeah, you know, I believe, and I don't know if this has been verified by waterfowl biologists, but certain species of waterfowl, they pair for life. And I've had that happen. But they tell me that if you shoot the female first, the male will come back and actually disregard the fire and the people they see and dogs and try to land next to the female. But if it goes the other way around, and you shoot the female, that's adios, baby, they're gone. Has that been your experience with model ducks? Because I know some geese are like that, too.
Well, I can confirm that just now, The one I just picked up was the second bird we dropped, and it was the hen. So I'm presuming the other one's the drake, which would have been the first bird to go down. So we'll see, but I don't have it in hand yet. I'm about to go to another area where it went down. I've definitely seen it with redheads, though. Redheads will always come back on a pair.
Yeah. You know, in the model duck, it's hard to distinguish the males from the females. Very hard. What do you use to try to determine the sex?
The beak is usually the easiest. The hens have a mallard hen beak, orange with black. And the drakes have a banana beak, just like a green hen.
Yeah, it's kind of rare to get a model duck because they're just wary birds, you know, being that they raise, they kind of know the blinds, they know the area, they see what's going on and become very difficult to hunt. But every now and then, you know, they'll make a mistake.
Absolutely. Today was just dumb luck. One came a little too close, and I think getting that first one played a lot into being able to get the second one as she came back, you know, for the first. So, you know, try to be lucky than good, right? but we're seeing a fair many of them. They're just like you said, they're holing up in the potholes, and you know, they just they know their territory, and because they're here all summer, and that, you know, they know where to avoid. You know, they avoid these big clusters of other ducks for the most part, or anything remotely resembling decoys. But every now and then they slip up, so we'll take it.
Is this your last trip, or are you going to be at it again tomorrow for the final day?
Well, I plan to hunt tomorrow, but pretty wind forecast is pretty bleak. So yesterday morning it was supposed to have a pretty good wind, and it ended up dying off on us, and the gnats came out with a vengeance, so with the warm temperatures. So I'm kind of terrified of that scenario playing out again tomorrow if the wind dies on me.
Yeah. Speaking of gnats, what is your best gnat repellent? There's a lot of stuff out there and a lot of different opinions on it. What is your remedy?
You know, I've heard all the frou-frou stuff, the amber romance and all that. I can honestly say I've yet to try it, but it is in the bay boat, but I've yet to actually give it a shot. My biggest remedy is just don't go, and there's not going to be any wind, and it's warm.
Yeah, that works. That works 100% of the time. Amber romance is my number one choice. It's pretty expensive, and you got to keep reapplying it. And the nets work pretty good, but they're just so cumbersome, particularly when it's warm. You know, it's it limits your vision and everything when you're wearing a head net. But that's pretty effective.
Yeah, if it
too.
Gets to that,
unless you put it on after they get in the net with you, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, if it gets to that point, I'm just maybe we should rethink what we're doing. You know, and then still at that point, you got to wear gloves because they're going to be on your hands as well. You know, so it can only cover so much. Yesterday, they were, you know, all over your head and your hands, and it's just awful. But you know, so we'll see about tomorrow. The one thing is the birds were sick, but you know, with sparse flights and the warm temperatures and maybe not much wind. I don't know about all that. Might be a good time to just rest up.
Yeah, well, get ready for that second split, and we'll be checking back with you then. Before you go, Darren, we've been kind of doing a little bit of Christmas gift shopping ideas. What would you say would be a good stocking stuffer for a duck hunter, something that most duck hunters might not think to get for themselves?
That's a great question. You know, I've always liked, if you don't have a thermosel, thermosels make great gifts, or the supplies therefore. You can buy those little refill kits. That makes a good stocking stuffer. A duck hunter can always use another basic mallard call, you know, like your Haydel DR85 or a little 6-in-1 whistle. It's always good to have extra ones. Headlamps. Headlamps are, for me, absolutely critical. I keep 2 or 3 of them around. And I get frustrated when people that come with me don't have them, because that's hands that they're tying up, you know, holding a light with a flashlight that they could be freed up, you know, for helping with P-Rows or decoys or brushing and that sort of thing. So those are probably some of my top ideas that are most critical for our hunts.
You know, Darren, something I find that a few hunters have, and they really are handy and very inexpensive gifts, I don't know what you call them, but they're those little straps to hold your pants legs tight when you put them into the boots.
Yeah, little leg garters. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that makes a great gift. A lot of people don't think about those. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right.
Wait, Cherie says she knows what they are. What are they officially called, Cherie?
In the military, they refer to them as the blousing rubbers.
That
they used to tuck the BDRs in.
I don't know if that name's any better than garters. I'm not sure which.
that's what you see them though on websites. They call it little neoprene garters or something. I think they try to add a masculine touch to it, but make them camo. But nonetheless,
yeah. Well, Darren, I've been great talking to you during the first split. Best of luck on the rest of your hunt today, and we'll catch up with you during the next split, and hopefully we'll get some more birds down.
Okay, sounds good. Y'all take care.
Thank you. Darren Digby, one of our duck hunting field reporters. All right, we're going to probably get another reporter, too, a little bit later on, but we're also going to talk to Becky Larkins. Becky is a refuge ranger at the Bayou Sauvage and the Big Branch National Wildlife Refuges, and she's going to tell us about some great events you might want to get involved with, especially for the kids. But I do get a lot of emails in, and a lot of times they stack up on me. I don't get time to answer. I usually answer as many as I can by replying to the email. But every now and then I get some that I think are of interest to the whole audience, so I'll kind of save them up and read them. This one came in, and it says, this is from Jimmy. He says, I remember several weeks ago, it was a long time ago, you did a test poll to find the best boudin. Now, Cherie, you remember that because you were one of the judges of the best boudin. He says, I can't find it anywhere. Can you tell me the names of the winners? Love your show and listen whenever I can. You remember the winning boudin, right?
Billy's boudin. Absolutely. Yeah, that was a good day because we had lots of good boudin.
Yeah, the entries were down there on the bottom. Remember, we did all of those. We taste tested them all.
Yeah, that's right. Don's, Best Stop, New News, A-Bears, and Billy's. And so we declared Billy the best.
Yep, and I got a box of Billy's we take into South Dakota because those boys up there will simply go crazy over Louisiana boudin.
Well, that's what I was thinking to our question earlier about can you make boudin out of the birds, the pheasants. Well, you know, we're going to bring them some boudin. We might get some South Dakota folks thinking about that for sure.
We might. Here's another one that came in and says, read that one for me, the question there.
We watched your show when you made the tacos. Can you please send me the recipe? So is that the fish taco recipe that we'd be referring to?
Right. I use Alaskan halibut as the fish. You can use redfish or any other fish. But that's that one that you and Blake brought from Texas. And we kind of modified, played with it a little bit, and got it right.
Yeah.
Real popular.
But it's very tasty.
Yeah, and they can find that. It's on my website, DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. We've got a lot of recipes we've built up over the years. So if you're looking for a recipe for just about anything that swims, flies, or crawls, you're going to find it by going to DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com or go to BayouWildTV.com, and you can actually watch us prepare some of those recipes. Martha did one. We call it the Martha Spencer Kitchen, not to be confused with the Martha Stewart Kitchen. And she and I do some recipes. She did a sriracha trout slider this week. It's on this week's show. You need to check that one out. It's really, really good. And I did an Aunt Jemima's pancake batter fish, and that's going to be coming up on a future episode. All right, we come back right after this break. We finally have got him, Captain Kirk Stansel of Hackberry Rod and Gun, out in the duck blind, and hopefully his report is better than these other reports. Whew, it's been tough out there for the duck hunters this weekend. We'll be right back with Captain Kirk after this pause on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network, and More Outdoors. And a little later on, we're going to have Glenn Shure of Standard Mapping come on to make a great announcement about a new product he's got out. Also, Craig Raleigh, the author of Hunter's Way, kind of a philosophical approach to hunting, which I think you'll find very interesting. It's a great book to read if you're on a deer stand. Also, Becky Larkins, the refuge ranger for the National Wildlife Refuge System, is going to join us to talk about some events that they've got coming up shortly. But right now, we finally have him, Captain Kirk Stansel from Hackberry Rod and Gun. I guess he's still out in the duck blind. It's 7:36,
nope.
But one of the blinds finished at 7:05 the other morning. Kirk, you done?
Yeah, we're done. It was 7:02 this morning.
You set a record.
Yeah, I set a record for this week. Man, we had a good hunt. It was really good. You know, I was hunting up in Hackberry Marsh. You know, when you were here Monday, we hunted down at what we call the Cameron Meadows Marsh in Johnson Bayou. But I came up local in the blind I normally hunt, and with the warm weather and southwest winds and that kind of a hazy conditions, the ducks were on. I mean, it happened.
And we got a mixture. Kirk, you are very fortunate because almost to a man, every reporter I've talked to this morning is singing the blues about absence of bird, no bird movement, saying that some of them it's been the worst first split that they can remember. And it seems like you guys have all the birds over there.
Oh, maybe so. I mean, we're loaded up right now. You know, this Hackberry Marsh was slow there for right after that big front the first week. They pushed the birds out of this marsh, but they were in the marsh that, you know, in the Cameron Meadows. But they showed back up here about 5-6 days ago. And,
Kirk,
you know,
was it the same type of breakdown on the species? You know, we had shot 8 different species when we hunted with you on Monday. Did you get a variety of birds today?
We got, we have green wing, blue wings, gadwall, and widgeon, I think is what we got. We lost a canvas back. It was clipped a wing, and it dove and never got it. That's what we shot this morning. The gadwall, the gray ducks were just eating it up this morning. They were, you know, they've been real hard to get the decoy, but this morning they were giving it up.
You know, it's a tough call to pass on birds because maybe you're looking for a certain species, hoping for canvasback or mallard or pintail. But, you know, it's hard to pass them up when you got a bird in the hand, you know?
Oh, yeah. You know, bird in the hand. You know, when you get greedy, you usually, it bites you in the butt sometimes.
Well, boy, I'm glad you guys are having such a great season over there, and hopefully the second split will continue to do that. It certainly has been the best hunt that Martha and Chris and I have made this season so far. Are you going to be fishing this afternoon?
We have some boats going out. I'm not going personally. I went yesterday. We had one boat, had 35 trout, and he had one almost 7 pounds. And he had a really pretty trout. That best trout bite I've seen, you know, all this whole split of duck season. And he was in a little old canal that emptied into West Cove, and falling tide, just fishing that current at the mouth of that little canal. I went over and we caught, I think, 10 reds. You know, most of them were oversized. And but, you know, one of the other boats had 15 or so redfish. So it was a good day, you know, and our bite was late. I mean, we started at noon, and when the tide really started falling hard, about, 2:30 is when we got on the fish.
And what were y'all using to catch them?
I was throwing gulp, the gulp shrimp, the 4-inch shrimp. That's what we were using. The guy that caught the trout was fishing live shrimp.
Now, what color gulp do you like? I like to use that kind of it's a mottled type color, like a greenish, maybe a little brownish mix.
I know what color you're talking. The best color yesterday was that glow, kind of a white with a chartreuse tail. I was throwing a pure white, catching them on that, and one of the other guys throwing a new penny and caught some on that. But the best color, the guy throwing the white with the chartreuse tail was doing the best. And he was throwing it. We were catching some reds right up next to some rocks with some current hitting those rocks. And a 3/16 ounce jig head throwing it right up next to the rocks. I mean, if you landed 5 feet away from the rocks, you might as well reel it in. You weren't getting a bite. So,
well, for people not familiar with what gulp is, what we're talking about, it's a heavily scented bait. It's kind of a hybrid between a plastic and live bait. You don't have to put the scent on it. It comes embedded in it. And I'm a believer in that stuff.
No doubt. It works. It really works, Don. I mean, you know, redfish and flounder, you know, they use scent to feed a lot, and it works on them. You know, and it works on trout too. But you know, trout are more of a feed by sight.
Right, Kirk. So y'all gonna close it out tomorrow? Got a full schedule of hunting for the last day of the first split.
We do. We have a full load tomorrow. We got 15 blinds hunting tomorrow, and we're gonna close it out. Most of us will pick our decoys up for the split, and then all of that Friday before it reopens on the 15th, we'll reset the decoys and get after it again.
Get back to work. Well, Kirk, yep. Thank you for your reports. We'll be checking with you again, doing that second split, getting some fishing and hunt reports. And thank you so much for that great trip. I edited the video piece that's going to air on my news piece on WWL next Thursday night, and there's some really good footage in there, and you'll be seeing that on a future episode of Bayou Wild TV. And we thank you for your hospitality, too. Guy and Bobby,
you bet.
Your whole family does a great job over there.
Well, thank you very much, and it was a pleasure having you and Martha and Chris, y'all first-class people. So thank you.
All right, Kirk. Have a good one, my friend. We'll catch up with you next time, buddy.
You got it. Take good care. Talking to you, Don.
All righty. Captain Kirk Stansel of the Stansel family. Sure you know what their nickname is over there? The KGB of Hackberry. Now, figure that out. Their first names, Kirk, Guy, and Bobby. KGB. They're also known as the Syndicate over there. Great bunch of people. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we come back. We're going to talk to Becky Larkins, a refuge ranger, National Wildlife and Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She's with the Bayou Sauvage and also Big Branch. Got a couple of really nice events coming up there, and I understand there's going to be a surprise visitor that the kids will be interested in meeting up with. Back with Becky right after this time out. You'll listen to More Outdoors on WWL 105.3 FM HD2. All right, if you're going to be with us in the 8 to 9 o'clock hour, we've got a couple of special guests going to join us. Glenn Shure of Standard Mapping, and also Craig Raleigh, who's the author of a book called The Hunter's Way. A very, very interesting read. If you're going to be whiling away the time on a deer stand or maybe in a duck blind in between the action, it's a great book to read, and we're going to get him to talk more about it. But that's coming up next hour. We talk now to Becky Larkins, a refuge ranger at the Bayou Sauvage National Wildlife Refuge, as well as the Big Branch National Wildlife Refuge. It's part of the Southeast Louisiana National Wildlife Refuge System. Becky, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Don. Thanks for having me.
Oh, always a pleasure. If you would, you know, a lot of times we assume people know a lot more than what they do. Explain to us about U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service refuges, what they are, and what generally the purpose of having them is.
Okay, that's a great question in the morning. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service National Wildlife Refuge System has been around since 1903. We were first started at Pelican Island National Wildlife Refuge in Florida by Teddy Roosevelt. And refuges are places where we like to say wildlife comes first, but it's more than just that. We are set up to encourage everyone to come out and enjoy their National Wildlife Refuge, their national heritage, and the really cool places that are in their own backyard. And the Fish and Wildlife Service National Wildlife Refuge System spans across the United States. There's over 567 national wildlife refuges, and there is one national wildlife refuge near every major city in the United States within a 30-minute to a 45-minute drive. And we are very fortunate here around Lake Pontchartrain because we're surrounded by 8 national wildlife refuges that make up the Southeast Louisiana National Wildlife Refuge Complex. We have, of course, Big Branch Marsh National Wildlife Refuge here on the North Shore, and we have Bayou Sauvage National Wildlife Refuge down in New Orleans. It's actually the second largest urban national wildlife refuge in the country, and we are very fortunate to have all 8 of our refuges, but they're just, we like to say they are the hidden treasures of the United States.
Becky, that's an excellent description, and these places truly are treasures because they're owned by us, the public. They're not leased out to private ownership. We don't run the risk of losing them unless something drastic would happen where they would be turned over to a private. I don't see that happening, and of course, they have to have special regulations and rules because of the high use in them, and they also vary all the uses, and I'm amazed at the amount of activities that go on beyond just hunting and fishing and camping and bird watching and the typical popular ones, canoeing. There's so many things to do. And you're right. We are so lucky here in Louisiana to have these refuges in such close proximity to a large population and so available to do that. And you guys just do a great job, and you got the volunteer organizations that chip in. And today I wanted to get you to talk about the Breakfast with the Birds program, which is actually starting tomorrow and going to continue for a few weeks. So if you would, kind of explain that to the listeners and how they can take advantage of this.
Oh, awesome. So we have an amazing volunteer base, and one of our volunteer partners and programs is, we call them resident volunteers. And resident volunteers actually will get in their RVs and they travel all across the country staying at different refuges. And we actually have a resident volunteer program of 5 RV pads that we have at Big Branch Marsh, but these volunteers help us at all of our refuges. And one of our volunteers, Sandy Wickland, is very good at what we call interpretation and assists us in the visitor services program. And she approached me to conducting a Breakfast with the Birds program, which is not just a bird hike. This is a nature hike with a focus on birds. And this will be hosted at Bayou Sauvage National Wildlife Refuge's Ridge Trail for 3 Sundays in December, starting tomorrow, Sunday, December 2nd, again on Sunday, December 9th, and on Sunday, December 16th from 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning. And it's a really fun program. We're going to explore the Ridge Trail. We're going to look for birds, but sometimes birds don't always cooperate with us. So we're going to look at the native flora and fauna. We're going to look at, you know, going to learn some basic bird identification, but also wildlife observation and what to look at in order to find our little critters that like to call our refuges home. And then throughout that, we're going to talk about conservation efforts that are being done along with restoration. A big part of Louisiana, in our refuges, we have to deal with restoration, especially with some of our coastal wetland areas. So we're going to be talking about different restoration projects that we do and that we need the public's help with. So it's a two-part. We're trying to give the public some knowledge and learn about experience their National Wildlife Refuge, experiencing their land. And at the same time, we're encouraging them on ways where they can come and help us. But it's a great program. It's fun for the entire family. We will have binoculars available, and we always encourage everyone, it's BYOB, bring your own breakfast. So after the program, you can actually bring out your breakfast, and as we go through what we saw, we can just have a nice time of building community with our neighbors, and that is the program, and it's a great time. I've done it with my family, and it's just a lot of fun.
Well, Becky, it's free. It gets underway at 8:30 tomorrow morning and then again on the 9th and the 16th. It's about an hour and a half, two-hour program. What should people be prepared to bring in terms of gear or equipment? And also, is this something that's suitable for the very young, the elderly, or possibly physically challenged?
Okay, yes. So it's on the Ridge Trail boardwalk, so it is ADA accessible and stroller friendly. So it is geared for a family. So what to bring? We always encourage people to, you know, bring your own breakfast and bring water bottles. We do have a water fountain on site, but it is best just to bring snacks and everything, especially if you have young children, please bring snacks. Or, you know, sometimes our elderly participants need snacks. We don't want anybody to get hangry out there, but it's a good time. We do have binoculars available upon request, and how you can do that is you can just email Sandy at Sandy, S-A-N-D-I, Wickland, W-I-C-K-L-U-N-D, at gmail.com. All one word, Sandy Wickland at gmail.com, and she can get you guys signed up for binoculars. We always encourage everyone to dress for the weather. We are going to be on a raised boardwalk trail, so we're not going to be actually walking in the Ridge Trail habitat management area. We're going to be walking on a raised boardwalk. But it's always best, we encourage everyone to stay on the trail, because you never know what critters are going to protect their home. And luckily, we are in the December month now. Happy December 1st. We are now in December, so we don't have to deal with as many biting insects. So you really don't have to worry about bringing a lot of bug spray or anything like that. It's just going to be a really nice. You get to see a lot of our winter migrants coming through. A lot of our migrants are coming down from the north now that the snow has arrived. So we are starting to see a lot more birds. And we like to call that a fallout. So as these different weather systems change up in the atmosphere, the weather systems are changing. And so we get a lot of birds that are falling out during migration as they proceed further south. So this is a really good time to see some of those migrants. We've been seeing a lot of American kestrels, which are the sparrowhawks. And those are always fascinating to see. And we're also seeing a lot of wading birds coming in. So it's really a good time to get out on the trail and really experience Southeast Louisiana for all the treasures that we have here.
All right. And if someone did not get Sandy's information on the loan of binoculars, which is a great idea, they're welcome to contact me and I'll put them in touch with Sandy. Cherie, my daughter's here with me. Cherie, we got a text message and a question for Becky. Would you tell her what that question is? And this may not be your field of expertise, but if you can't answer it, please do.
I can always help. Good morning, Becky. And maybe if you can't answer, you could direct us to provide someone who actually can. So the question was regarding the restoration project and why it was discontinued on the Big Branch Refuge in Fritchie Marsh.
That's a good question, because the restoration projects are still going on at Big Branch Marsh National Wildlife Refuge. And we are going to be doing some marsh plantings coming up soon. We're not only doing marsh plantings, but we're also doing some tree plantings that are becoming up this later this winter in January, February, and March. So we are going to be doing some plantings. I would have to get with the refuge manager, Danny Bro, to see exactly where those plantings are occurring. But restoration projects have not stalled at Fritchie Marsh or at Big Branch Marsh National Wildlife Refuge. The Quipra project at Fritchie, we do have to allow some of the times for some of that sediment to settle. And when that sediment settles, then after it settles, then we can go in. So it might look like we've stalled, but it's possibly just the settlement time. So that might confuse some of the general public as well. But if you have any questions on the restoration projects, you can always contact refuge manager Danny Bro. And you can email him at Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, underscore bro, B-R-E-A-U-X, at fws.gov.
Very good. Becky, we're just about out of time, and I do know that Santa's coming to Bayou Lacombe Visitor Center December 15th.
Yes,
we'll get you on next week to talk more about that, but let people plan for it, December 15th, 2 to 4, and we'll have details on next week's show with Becky Larkins. Becky, thanks so much for being with us. You do a great job on the refuge.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Don and Sheree. Have a great day.
You do the same. All right, that is Becky Larkins, Refuge Ranger. And I tell you, we do have a treasure in having those refuges in such close proximity to the city. Bayou Sauvage, that's the one in the Chef area, Highway 11 area, and the one Big Branch is located on the banks of Bayou Lacombe. And that is a huge one. It stretches all the way from Fountain Blue State Park going east, almost to the Mississippi State line south of Slidell. That's where that Fritchie Marsh Restoration Project is going on. And if y'all haven't caught on, you may notice that a lot of these restoration projects get priority when they're on U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and National Refuge property. And that's because they're there for us. They're there forever. It's owned by us. and it's not improving someone's private property. It's only protecting and enhancing our own. All right, we come back. Glenn Shore is going to join us, Standard Mapping Service, and a visit with Craig Raleigh, the author of a book you're going to love to hear about if you're a hunter, or even if you're a non-hunter, something you probably would like to read. It's called The Hunter's Way. We'll be right back after this sports update from NBC. Cherie Dubuque, Don Dubuque, and you're listening to More Outdoors on WWL 105.3 FM HD2. And I want to say a good hello to the Big Hawk crew from North Carolina staying at Mike Gallo's kitchen, a camp, maybe in the kitchen.